Heidi Holton, thanks for choosing this KAXE-KBXE conversation. We are member-supported radio, a National Public Radio affiliate in northern Minnesota. We need your support for our radio broadcasts, our online content, and our podcast. Go to KAXE.org, and thanks for listening. Welcome back to our statewide conversation with Minnesota state officials. Today, we will be talking to Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. It is your opportunity to ask questions about Minnesota's response and plans during the current COVID-19 pandemic. My name is Heidi Holton. I'm live from the KAXE studios on the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids. If you didn't get a chance to send or call in your question this week, email COVID@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. We are teaming up with the 18 community radio stations of Ampers Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association to bring you this COVID-19 information for the state of Minnesota. Back with us now is Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. Thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I want to start today talking about some of the things that you and the governor have been doing lately. I saw that you had a Zoom call with some Minnesota manufacturers this week. Will you tell us what that was like and what you learned there?
Sure. So, you know, we've had a lot of conversations with folks across the state. The governor and I have both been visiting with small businesses of all shape, you know, all shapes and sizes and different sectors and areas, which has been really helpful for us to hear directly from folks about how things are going, what additional support or adaptations they might need. But hearing from manufacturers was incredibly important because they're the one sector, to be really frank, that is hiring. There's a lot of opportunity for Minnesotans to learn on the job. And what we heard from manufacturers is they are just ready and willing to train folks. And so while we see, unemployment rates that are difficult right now, I think there is hope in manufacturing. But what we also heard is that there are challenges for folks who want to access these jobs with lack of housing in the community where these manufacturers are located, as well as lack of childcare. So, you know, when we're thinking about these issues, we have to think about the whole person and the whole family who would be accessing them. And our job is to think about removing some of those barriers to employment, too.
And I bet adequate daycare was part of that conversation, too.
Absolutely. And, you know, we were in a childcare crisis before COVID-19 hit. This is a place where we've been working to get millions and millions of dollars out the door for childcare facilities so that they can continue to provide care, ensure that they have the personal protective equipment that's needed, ability to sanitize. And I've been talking to a lot of childcare workers who are still making it work, but they're struggling. So my hope is when it comes to manufacturing as well as small businesses, including childcare, that our congressional delegation and our partners in Washington will get some additional support out there. We can't deficit spend on a state budget, and so we need some additional support from the federal government.
You know, I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but can you give us an example of one of the manufacturers that was on that call?
Sure. So, you know, the folks that we're talking to, some are making widgets, right? But a lot of folks right now, there's folks that we talked to who have quite a few machines. And as we're talking about automation, one of the things I think that we've heard from folks feeling nervous about the automation that's coming in, is that taking jobs away from folks? What we've actually heard is that they need more people who can monitor many of these machines. So that's, you know, one of the things that we heard on the call. Again, it's just the opportunity for additional folks to look for new jobs. But I do want to mention one thing, Heidi, that we heard consistently. We had folks on from St. Cloud State as well as from folks in southern Minnesota who are educators, that the lack of having access to things like to shop class anymore, or folks being able to, you know, spend their afternoon maybe working in a small business or with a manufacturer, has sort of put some barriers into the pipeline of recruitment. So that's also something that we're looking at with our partners at the Minnesota Department of Education to see, you know, what else can we do there to make these really well-paying jobs more appealing, and I think to young people. A four-year degree isn't for everyone, and these are really viable options for folks, and so we want to make sure that we're also encouraging people to seek out those opportunities, and there's some stuff that we can do at the state level to ease and make that transition more appealing.
I also saw in the news this week about appointments that you have made to the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board Advisory Task Forces. First, what is it? And tell us more about these appointments.
Sure. So the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board is actually one of the things that is written into statute. That's the role of the Lieutenant Governor to chair. And so the CAP board has gotten quite a lot of attention lately since the removal of the Columbus statue. And it was important to us, you know, as we're hearing from folks across the state, that there really isn't a process for the removal of any statues or monuments. There certainly is a process to, you know, to put additional monuments or memorials up. And so I worked with folks across the state of Minnesota to create two advisory task forces that will help the board to determine how we can better engage the public so that folks across the state really feel like the Capitol is theirs, where they can be seen and heard and valued and reflected in the kind of experience that they have at the Capitol, both inside the building and the Capitol grounds. And then the other task force will help us advise us on putting together a process for, you know, how we would go about it, removal of a monument or statue or artwork if that's, you know, what Minnesotans feel like they want to see. But because there wasn't a process that existed in the first place, we felt like we needed to really engage Minnesotans across the state. So there's two task forces, like I said. One will be chaired by Dr. Gwen Westerman, who is a professor at Minnesota State Mankato. And the other will be chaired by Carl Crawford, who is the head of the Human Rights Department in the city of Duluth. And I encourage people to check out these task forces. I think, you know, they truly reflect the state of Minnesota, and that was important. And we want people to be able to participate with us online via Zoom for some of the first engagements we will do virtually. But then our hope is to, in the spring, get out across the state of Minnesota and do some in-person engagements, of course, social distance and wearing masks, but, you know, where we can sort of hit the pockets where maybe we haven't heard enough from people.
I like that word, hope, for the spring. That would be great. We have to plan ahead, even though we don't know exactly. You're listening to the Statewide Conversation with Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. Also good news that came out this week, the bonding bill finally passed in the latest special session. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. So the bonding bill is about $1.8 billion, and it goes to projects and infrastructure across the state that, frankly, is overdue. This is really a jobs and projects plan more than anything else. It'll be a shot in the arm to our economy during this difficult time. But I have to tell you, one of the things that I'm most excited about is that we got a top priority for me and for our office was $30 million in cash bonding projects that are for Black, Indigenous, people of color organizations across the state of Minnesota. And so some examples include the Hmong American Farmers Association, the Indigenous People's Task Force, and Juxtaposition in North Minneapolis. You know, the bonding process itself can be a little mysterious. It's sort of an inside game, and it was important that we made sure that we had true equity in bonding, and that was part of it, as well as having equity in hiring language for any project that receives bonding dollars. And the last thing that I'm just really excited about is that we had $116 million in bonding for housing. That's the largest amount that we've ever secured. We know that there's an incredible need. So I think Minnesotans can feel proud of the bipartisan work that went into this bill.
On the housing topic, are there still protections for evictions, moratoriums?
There absolutely are. And as long as the emergency order continues for that we need to re-up every 30 days with our partners in the legislature, that eviction protection will also continue. So that has just been renewed for another 30 days.
Okay. Well, we've been telling our listeners about the saliva testing site at the Duluth Entertainment Convention Center, the DEC, but there is more saliva testing sites coming out, right?
That's correct. And I didn't think that I would be talking so much about saliva in 2020, but here we are. And there is that site in Duluth. There's also a site in Brooklyn Park, one in Winona, and one in Moorhead. And we also intend to open at least 6 additional sites for a total of 10 across the state. So, there's folks who have been reporting back that it's quick and easy and they get the results quickly. We're really excited about it. And, we'll please watch as these additional sites come online so folks can access them fairly close to where they live.
When we talked a few weeks ago to Assistant Health Commissioner Dan Huff, he said there is good of tests as the nasal swabs, that we can trust those as well for saliva.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yep, that's right.
Okay. Well, let's move on to a question from a listener. We heard from someone who said, Lieutenant Governor, I thought of you right away when I heard that the Supreme Court ruled that the census should be stopped right away. I thought, I wonder what Peggy thinks about this. Did our state do a good job this year in the census, or do you think we fell short?
So, it warms my heart, listener, that you thought about me when you heard the Supreme Court decision come down, because that means that I was doing my job. But I have to say, I can't tell you exactly what I thought because it contained expletives. But I was pretty angry and really disappointed that was the decision that was made without any real explanation coming from the Supreme Court. But what I can say is that, as Minnesotans, we're still number one for filling out the census. It looks like we have a self-response rate of about 75%. So we did well, and I think that, the challenge continues to be that there are still so many undercounted communities throughout the state, like tribal nations. So that we'll see how that shakes out as they begin to sift through and clean up the data by December 31st. But I think considering the challenges that we faced this year, we did well, but we sure could have used that extra month.
Yeah, that 25%, I bet that just killed you.
It sure does.
Yep. Well, let's move on to a question having to do with education. We heard from a teacher this week who said Minneapolis public schools have just put teachers on notice that they may be returning to the classroom or a hybrid model in early November. I, along with my fellow teachers, have serious concerns, especially in light of the fact that numbers are going up, not down. Do you think we, that's my teaching colleagues and I, are being overly concerned?
Well, I think really, first of all, thank you for being a teacher, and it does not surprise me at all that teachers are concerned about, kiddos coming back into the classroom and they're concerned about themselves and their colleagues. Teachers care, that's what they do. And there's so much to balance inside the school building this year, and we know that educators are feeling incredibly stressed right now. We tried to ensure that with the safe learning plan that it recognized community spread and school capacities so that school communities, including Minneapolis Public Schools, could make the most informed decisions possible. I do think as we see, we do see that the infection rates are going up. It's going to be really important that the Department of Education work really closely with districts to determine, you know, if coming back full-time in person is really an option, or if they should look at hybrid or continued distance learning, depending on the infection rates in their community. But I want to be super clear for this teacher and for all teachers that if educators feel unsafe in their workplace, they have the right to bring it up to their administration. And if they feel discriminated against, they have the right to reach out to the Department of Human Rights, especially if folks have an underlying condition. That's important to do. And if their workplace really proves to be unsafe, that is why we encourage people to reach out to OSHA and to report that as quickly as possible.
And I don't usually do this, but I do want to editorialize and say, you know, have some patience with teachers and administrators and the people working in schools. There are really hard decisions. It's a really hard job, harder than ever, and they deserve our patience and grace.
100% correct. And, you know, my daughter just started back at her school. They're doing hybrid 2 days a week for half days. You know, the class sizes are smaller. Her teachers are doing an incredible job. And I have to say, just on a personal note, my kid is like a brand new person being able to be around other children. But also, they are very spaced out, and she takes it, like I've, you know, told your listeners before, she is an enforcer on mask wearing and making sure that people are doing what they need to do. And that's what we've heard a lot from educators, is that young people know the rules, and they are, you know, they're making sure that folks are following them in their classrooms, the other students. But absolutely, it's up to grownups to make sure that they're safe. And we're all in an impossible position right now.
Yeah. Well, we had an email this week. If you have a question you'd like to be in later shows, you can email covid@ampers.org. This one said, "Dear Lieutenant Governor, I was frightened and appalled by what went down in Michigan last week with the arrest of more than a dozen militia members for their plans to kidnap the Michigan governor and bring her to trial in their own kangaroo court. Have there been any threats like that against you or the governor? How do you go about your job with all these extremists and their words, not mine, nut jobs out there?"
So I appreciate that question, and I will tell you that currently, no, there are not threats specifically against myself or the governor. The Department of Public Safety takes these threats very seriously, and, you know, monitors our safety and well-being, and I appreciate your concern. You know, my heart goes out to Governor Whitmer, and, you know, I want to thank the FBI in particular for doing their job, and the law enforcement who are partners in their quick response. I reached out immediately after hearing about it to my friend Garland, who is the lieutenant governor of the state of Michigan. And, you know, I think he's like, "We're good, and we're going to keep doing what we need to do." But there really are consequences for the kind of rhetoric that we hear on a national level. And, you know, this is one of them. So we will continue to work with the Department of Public Safety and State Patrol to ensure that the governor and I have adequate safety measures in place to be able to protect ourselves while we do our jobs. But, you know, I appreciate folks' concern it's scary stuff.
We'll move on to another question from a listener. They said, "This week our state had its highest death rate from COVID since June. I was very sorry to hear that. Does this indicate that we are going in the wrong direction?"
The short answer is yes. And as cases are surging in neighboring states, I'm sure you've all seen that little map, right, where Minnesota sort of stands out. You know, we are carefully monitoring our own test rates, hospital capacity, and deaths. And it's important to know the pandemic is not over. We are still in an emergency. And to know that as weather is getting colder, and certainly the topic of conversation for every Minnesotan today is clearly that it's snowing, based on the social media that we've all seen in the last couple of hours here. But, you know, that means people are going to be going indoors more. And, you know, it is so important, again, to wash your hands, wear your mask, practice social distancing. And I just want to encourage folks again that it's really important to get the flu shot. My family and I got our shots on Monday. And that, you know, is all, we don't want two pandemics happening at the same time.
Well, let's move on to some questions that came up about the upcoming holidays. First, does your daughter have a costume she's going to wear?
She is going shopping for a costume this weekend. Okay. And is not yet committed to what she'll be. She's like, Mom, I can't decide. Yeah. So I will let everybody know next week okay. what she decides she will be.
Well, we had someone write in who said that their friend has an elaborate plan for how they're going to prepare and hand out trick-or-treats on Halloween. She says she's going to wear gloves, make little bags of candy, and put these bags out on a card table for the kiddos to come by and pick up. But as the parent of two school-age kids, I don't trust that everyone will be as cautious as she is planning to be. If I let my kids trick-or-treat, would the candy be safe if we leave it out in the garage for several days, or is it better just to forego the whole thing, hand over a bag of candy, and curl up with movies on Halloween?
So, like, everything this year, right, Halloween is going to look a little different. Also, like, shout out to your friend, because it looks like they are, you know, certainly following the recommended steps for handing out candy this year, which is making candy bags, wearing gloves and masks, sanitizing thoroughly, handing out the candy from on a table or from a distance. You know, and I think that you are taking a safe approach if you're planning to stay home and eat candy and watch movies. It's just really hard. And, you know, for those who do decide to celebrate with others, wear those masks, follow everything, you know, that we've been advising folks to do over the last 8 months here. You know, other ideas would be hosting a small outdoor costume parade or socially distanced scavenger hunt with friends and neighbors. You know, I know that it's hard for kiddos to not celebrate this year. I will just tell you as a mom, you know, the personal choice that we are making for our family is to not trick-or-treat this year. We will be doing just an outdoor costume parade. And I have cut a deal with my child, which is that she can pick out a full bag of the candy of her choosing. So I may regret that decision later on, but that's, you know, that's what we're planning on doing. Maybe watch a little Hocus Pocus, but it can't be the same, and we need to be safe.
Yeah. If it was a normal year and after your daughter went to bed, which candy would you take?
That is an excellent question. Usually Snickers is my go-to.
Okay.
Yep. And I don't understand Tootsie Rolls. I just don't. And so those are the ones that my husband goes for, you know, out of the candy bag. So, you know, it works.
Kit Kats for me, totally.
Awesome.
Let's move on to Thanksgiving. People are starting to look ahead to that. We heard from someone who said that their niece and nephew have been sick with COVID in recent weeks. They said that their kids did not get the virus, or they must have had it before, or they're asymptomatic. Assuming that they both recover just fine, God willing, I'm wondering if it will now be safe for us to be around them. We've been extremely careful to protect ourselves, my elderly mother. Here's the big question, though. Can we invite my niece and nephew and their kids to Thanksgiving? They are suggesting that once they recover, they will not be infectious. They'll all be immune. Should we let them into our safety bubble, or are they still a risk to us?
So, you know, the truth is we just don't know enough about protective immunity and how long it lasts yet. We think that reinfections are not common, but we certainly have heard of them in recent weeks, and they can happen. You know, there's a report that just came out this week of a previously healthy 25-year-old with COVID-19 whose symptoms started at the end of March. They had a positive test in April. Symptoms resolved at the end of April, but they had negative tests in May and a new onset of symptoms at the end of May with a positive test, and comparisons of the virus from a specimen showed that a different virus strain, it was a different virus strain than the one that he had earlier. So we just don't know. And it's hard to know if the children were infected or not, and whether they may become infected or if they're asymptomatic, when they're infectious. So we've seen, this is the thing, right? And what we have seen is we have seen, transmissions at gatherings, just like the one that this listener has described. And so given the high level of virus that's circulating, we absolutely recommend using caution, especially if there's people at high risk for COVID, who would get a severe illness with COVID. And I know it's so hard, and I know that it's terrible. And I would just say that, if it is possible to have a smaller dinner and connect with folks online, to have a virtual table that is set with folks, that would probably be, what I would recommend. That's what our family did for Passover. We may be doing that again this year, and it feels terrible, and I'm sorry that this is what's happening, but maybe if you can have the same kind of delicious foods while you can still talk right to your family, it's not as the same as being at the table, but I think it could be a fairly good substitute this year.
And whether the kids in this question had it or not, I have heard leaders in, media, state media, in national media say that kids are immune from getting COVID-19. Will you answer that question for us?
It's just not true. Kids are not immune, and they can be carriers, they can be asymptomatic, but we also know, I have a dear friend whose child got COVID and they were hospitalized. It is just not something that you want to mess with, and there's just absolutely no truth to the fact that kids can't get it.
Before we go, one of our listeners wanted to know what your plans were for keeping your sanity as the weather turns colder, since it won't be as easy to spend as much time outside in nature.
So I appreciate that, and as your listeners know, I am absolutely an extrovert, so I have been grateful for warm weather and being able to spend time with friends and family outdoors. We just took my mom to the, just this past weekend, and we're able to sit outside with her. So as the weather turns colder, it's a little tough. But one of the things that we will do is we had virtual game nights with friends. The other thing is I think that there's a list of over, Jason DeRusha from WCCO has put together a list of over 100 restaurants that will continue to have seating outdoors with small bonfires or heat lamps. I think that may be something that I will be interested in checking out. And here in Minnesota, we're pretty hardy. We know if you dress for it, you'll be all right. So I told my husband that I may just go cross-country skiing with him a few times this winter, and I think he's probably going to hold me to it. So that may be an activity that we also do this winter.
I think that's a great reminder, because as numbers have started to creep up again, I think we've forgotten how important it is to order from local restaurants and do takeout if you're not comfortable going there safely, but that we still have to kind of help out our friends and neighbors who work and run those establishments.
That's absolutely right, and I think our hospitality industry has done a tremendous job adapting, but as it gets colder, that is when they're going to need us the most.
Yeah. That is Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. You've been listening to our statewide conversation. Thanks so much for your time this week.
Thanks so much, Heidi. Take good care.
You too. This has been the statewide conversation. If you didn't get a chance to send or call in your question this week, you can email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. To listen to this conversation or forward it to your friends, you can go to ampers.org or kaxe.org. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE. Thanks for listening.